the Business on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. You see it, we help you do it. AIB, for the life you're after. The Business on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. You see it, we help you do it. AIB, for the life you're after.
Good morning. Coming up, a wave of drugs on the high seas, highest when sober and wallowing in vice, when traditional music strikes the right note, and shaking a shillelagh at Paddy Wackery. You can contact us by text to 51551, email thebusiness at rte.ie, or tweet to @thebusinessrte. But first, to a great news story for an Irish animation business that's drawn some dough this week, you might say. Brown Bag Films started out in the 1990s when two friends, Cathal Gaffney and Dara O'Connell, finished up in Ballyfermot College. Almost 20 years in, after two Oscar nominations, one for Give Up Your Old Sins, they sold Brown Bag to Nine Story Media, staying on as shareholders. And this week, Nine Story was bought over by Scholastic for $185 million. Cathal Gaffney, Managing Director of Brown Bag Films and Chief Operating Officer of Nine Story Media Group, joins me now. Cathal, you're very welcome. That's a very big number. You had already sold Brown Bag, the business you set up with Dara, back in 2015. You'd sold it to Nine Story. But I presume you held on to a shareholding of Nine Story. So this is a good week for you, is it?
We're very happy with the announcement, all right, yeah. So there was a lot of shareholders in the business. We were private equity backed as well. So, you know, it's really about the content, though. It's what's most exciting for us is Scholastic are such a wonderful company. They're a book publisher.
They're an American New York.
An American company. New York based. They're on the stock exchange, and they produce some of the best children's books out there. And we've worked with them for many, many years, like on shows like Magic School Bus and Clifford the Big Red Dog, and we've just finished a show for Apple with them called Eva the Owlet.
So you'd already been working with them, and going way back, your mother would have had a connection with yeah. Scholastic. Tell me about that.
Well, Scholastic are also very well known for their school book fairs. So they, you know, they go into schools around the country, and my mother used to work for Scholastic in a Cabra industrial estate. So it was quite funny that you know, I never thought much of it at the time, you know, but it was a part-time job for her. It was great.
And you're going to stay on after this deal, are you? You're staying with
yeah,
the business?
Yeah.
So you'll be working for Scholastic as well, second generation.
Yeah, ironically, yeah. But it is exciting. We're really looking forward to the kind of next chapter. You know, as we get to your 30th anniversary, like, you know, you have to kind of reinvent yourself, I suppose, you know. So it's really exciting to kind of look forward with a partner like Scholastic in the business.
And would you, after, 30 years since Brown Bag,
yeah.
Would you think about, you know, hanging up your pencil or your animated computer toolkit or whatever and say, oh, I think I'll take it easy now, I've had enough? Oh,
well, I looked at my CV. I think I'm rubbish at everything else. The only thing I know is animation. So I'll stick with it for a while more, you know.
But as someone who started off as an animator and had an Oscar nomination and everything, as the business got bigger, you had to move into very much the world of business.
Yeah.
Do you do any animation directly yourself? Have you done any in a long time?
No, not at all. It is funny. Like, I started off as an animator. I went to animation college, and, you know, Dara and myself started a business. It was very, very small at the time. In the early 90s, there was no internet. You know, we had an electric typewriter doing our first invoices. It was quite crazy. But it's just been such a journey that, you know, like for me, it's nearly all about management accounts and business and you know, spreadsheets these days.
Do you miss the animation side of it?
Well, you know, I don't really. Like, I mean, I prefer to be a facilitator. Like, if you can facilitate talent to do their job properly, that's what really kind of motivates me. So
you've turned into a spreadsheets man, haven't you? I know.
But it's funny, all my creative friends think I'm a businessman, and all my business friends think I'm pure creative. So I'm like Billy No Mates in the middle, like, you know, kind of.
And which do you prefer?
To be honest, I've moved much more into the business side, but at my heart, I'm probably a creative. So I really straddle both worlds.
And when you look back at school days, what were you good at in school? Did you have a bit of a knack for finance or maths or money, or was it all drawing and creating?
Well, I was good at drawing on my school books. My mother used to give out that she could never sell any of my school books back in the 80s because I used to have doodles all over them, you know. So I suppose if that's an encouragement to anybody with a creative kid, like to push them down that road into the creative industries.
What about the math side of things? No.
No, it was never a strong subject, no. I didn't do too well in the Leaving Cert in maths, no, which is quite ironic.
At some point, though, you were doing your drawing and you were doing the doodling. Yeah. At some point, you decided you wanted to get into animation and make a career out of it, and you went to Ballyfermot. At what point was that? Was it something that got a hold of you at some stage?
Not really. I'll tell you, it was accidental that I got into animation, and it was accidental that we started Brown Bag. So I went to the Ballyfermot open day, and I saw all the work that was on the walls at the time, and I just thought, oh, this is great. I'll apply for this. And so I was there for 3 years, and I absolutely loved it. And as soon as we finished college, Darren and myself just wanted to make more short films. Like, that's what we were doing. Like, we had no business plan, and it was just about, you know, doing something really small. And
you got a lend of money off your mother's to set up the company. How much was that?
It was £2,000 of a loan from Dara's mother and my mother at the time. So we paid it back, though, so it's okay.
Did they charge interest? No.
They didn't. We got it was an interest-free loan.
And that made all the difference. And then, obviously, when the company started, you know, you've got to get into an element of business about it, even though it was very much a creative force.
Yeah.
And then Give Up Your Old Sins, the Oscar nomination comes along. From the outside, we all assume that you must have this sort of a burgeoning business empire if you get an Oscar nomination, and people will be saying, you know, well, what's your next move and what are you doing next? Was it like that?
Not really. Like, I used to joke and say it was like winning the lotto with no cash. I mean, like, getting a nomination was like such a massive experience for us at the time. But it didn't come with cash, like, and we were running a very small business at the time, you know. But what it did was it opened up the doors for us, and we used that as an opportunity to go more over to the States hustling for work, and we set up an office in LA shortly afterwards. And, you know, we started bringing in work out of the US about 2 or 3 years afterwards. So
it was a turning point in that sense.
Yeah.
But it wasn't an instant cash machine.
No, it wasn't. You know, and at the time, like, everybody thought it was, but it wasn't. You know, so we'd a lot of difficult years in the business, particularly the first 10 years or so. You know, it was very.
In what way was it a bit hand to mouth? Was it uncertain?
Hand to mouth. Like, I mean, there isn't much work in Ireland, so. You know, we had to travel. Like, there's no work in Ireland, so you had to make your own work. So I was on the plane quite a bit at the time, bringing in business out of the UK, out of the US, and so on, because it's just the way it is. You know, like, Ireland is a small country, and we've always kind of seen ourselves as like an animation studio located in Ireland, doing international work for kids around the world, rather than like an Irish animation company.
And then another Oscar nomination came for Granny O'Grim.
Yeah, Nicky Phelan directed another short film. And he's just gone on and directed a new TV series that he created called Lou and the Bally Bunch, which is coincidentally on RTE, but it's also on the BBC, and it's been sold around the world at the moment.
And 2015, you sold the company to Nine Story, a Canadian company.
Yeah.
And just a snapshot of the business today, because you have a couple of hundred people in Dublin, there are people in Toronto,
yeah.
And you've got, is it 300 in Bali?
Yeah, we've 350 in Bali.
How did that happen, and why Bali?
So it's really challenging to produce animation, and you need a lot of staff. It's a very labour-intensive job. So we needed to... We needed to outsource our animation, and we were working a lot with a studio in Bali, which were fantastic. And after about 2 or 3 shows that we were doing with Disney, I approached them at the time and I said, listen, what if we bought you? You know, so that started the conversation, and it turned out to be very fruitful. So I'd recommend that everybody sets up a studio in Bali. It's a wonderful place.
I mean, I have images of, you know, a beautiful studio right on the beach. Is it like that?
Oh God, I'll be totally honest, it's not. It is more like Cabra Industrial Estate. Like, it's like, it's far away
weather.
From the beach, and it's you know, we put the money on the screen and not in the...
But you'd have to build up and train the skill set there. Or yeah. Is it the case that, you know, Bali, nice beaches and attractive place yeah. to live, it's able to pull in people from other countries who want to go there? Or do they all sort of have to be trained up? Did you have to oversee that?
We did. We worked a lot with the local colleges, and we have a fantastic team there with Lily and Daniel, who run the studio, and they plugged in at all the local colleges, and we invested in that because it was the first studio in Bali at the time, Lily and Daniel studio. So we worked really closely with them on building up that skill set, and so now it's doing really well.
Would that have been just impossible to do in Ireland or in Britain or in a higher cost location, those kinds of numbers?
It's definitely a lower cost work environment. A lot of people would go to China or would go to India, you know, but I think Indonesia is a really fantastic country. It's a great place to do business. And we were very happy to work there. And as you said, like, it is a lower cost environment. So it does allow us to produce more animation for less cost.
So how does the business work then, Cathal? For example, you guys have made all kinds of series. I mean, ones that people would know, like The Octonauts, Peter Rabbit, Doc McStuffins,
yeah.
Disney.
Yeah.
But you don't own Doc McStuffins, let's say, for yeah. example. Disney owns Doc McStuffins.
Yeah.
So what's the deal? How does it work?
Well, I suppose we're a product and a service business. Like, there's two strands to what we do. And on one side of the business, we would do creative services. So Disney would come to us and say, listen, we have an idea for a TV show. Will you make it? So we would produce and direct it and, you know, make the entire show out of our studio in Smithfield. And they would own the underlying intellectual property. And a show like Doc McStuffins has gone on to sell $2 billion worth of retail, like, you know, hats, scarves, lunchboxes and so on. But we don't get any back end of that.
So it's essentially a fee.
It's a fee.
A fee deal. You make it for them and they own it.
And it's a very good business, you know, like, we love to work on shows like that because, you know, shows like Doc McStuffins are iconic. You know, we did that for 10 years, you know.
And then you'd have other ones where, or is it the case that you guys would come up with an idea?
Yeah.
You say, we're going to make this. Let's see in advance who might be interested in buying it and what kind of a deal you could make
yeah.
with them.
So most recently we had a show called Karma's World, which was for we created it, and we worked with Ludacris, who was the originator of the show. And then we sold that to Netflix. And we owned all the underlining IP with Ludacris, and we did a whole load of licensing deals, and we had it in McDonald's around the world, and we had, you know, the Happy Meals was a Karma's World McDonald's, and there was toys. We had Mattel as a master toy license on it as well. So it is a bit of both. So, you know, that show may not have become the Peppa Pig that we wanted it to be, but, you know, we're playing in that arena.
And what's it like to try and negotiate those kinds of deals between yourself and Dara? It must get pretty complicated because both sides are taking a punt that it's going to work out.
Yeah. Yeah, it is complicated, but thankfully we have a very large organisation and there's an awful lot of really skilled kind of lawyers, and we've a lot of in-house talent like in Toronto and Dublin, and, you know, that the deals like that are, you know, the negotiation can take a year, you know, so there's quite a bit to it before you actually start the physical animation.
One of the things I would have thought that's fantastic for the animation industry has been all of these new platforms and content providers mm-hmm. and the shift away from maybe just the traditional TV or yeah. movie model. And, you know, you've got Netflix and you've got Disney, you've got all of these streamers. But some of them, they're huge companies, but some of them have thrown huge amounts of money at a sort of a land grab.
Yeah.
And it has proved expensive. And then interest rates went up and some of them have seen that, you know, a bit of a wobble in relation to their financial commitments. Have they re-looked again at their costs, or are they still all steam ahead?
Yeah, it's actually a very interesting time in the industry. The market has softened quite a bit. I mean, for the last 10 years, it was, you know, all the streamers, Apple, Netflix, Prime, they were all commissioning tons and tons of children's animation, and now it's kind of pulled back quite a bit. So, you know, you can see it in their stock prices. Their stock prices are down. They're cutting both costs and they're cutting content that they produce. So it's a tricky time, I would say, globally. But it'll bounce back. I mean, it always does. And, you know, I think, you know, we're somewhat insulated in the work that we do because we do both service and IP work. But it's, you know, it's not as busy as it was, you know.
What about the future then of the industry and thinking about technology and AI in particular? The argument goes that, you know, AI is not going to fundamentally change the role of the human being in the creative process. And I'm sure animation, plots, storylines, characters, yeah, people will still come up with them. But there's large sections of animation that are pretty mundane, you know, in the sense of you've got to have so many frames, and AI would surely be in a position to shortcut a lot of those repetitive aspects of the process, wouldn't it?
Yeah, like I have to say, I'm very excited by AI. I mean, in all the years that we've been in business, I've seen a lot of technology changes, and I think this is possibly the biggest. It's certainly the most disruptive. But a bit of me is also, you know, I think it was Aristotle that came up with the three-act structure. And in 1,000 years' time, kids are just going to want engaging characters with good storylines. So the technology and how it's distributed is always going to change. But the manufacturing process of animation is going to be enhanced by AI, without doubt. But I think as long as we look at AI as a productivity tool and not a creative tool, I think when the artist is on top, it's going to be better. But there's an awful lot of ethical considerations as well around voice cloning, you know, and putting actors out of work and voice cloning, or sorry, like Midjourney, a lot of people are familiar with that, like the image generation, where that's trained on other people's copyright. So if you're using Midjourney, it's akin to pirated software. So, you know, so there's a lot of ethical considerations, but then in the background, AI is absolutely going to speed up the process.
So from your point of view, the final product in the future, that where AI has a part in that, yeah, process, may well be a better product as a result of that. But would it require fewer people to make?
I think possibly. Like, I mean, I think it's I don't see the mass unemployment that people are predicting and the scaremongering that goes with that. I think the jobs that are going to be lost from AI will be people who don't know how to use AI to enhance their work. So it's going to be a real productivity tool, rather than a mass unemployment tool that you sometimes hear about that grabs the headlines.
When you look at the industry in Ireland, and we seem to be in a very good place in relation to, you know, Oscars and, yeah, acting and films and animation as well, is there more that we could do on the education front? I mean, I'm sitting here with you as somebody who used to do a bit of creative doodling, yeah, in school, and then you've ended up building a whole business around it and a whole career. Are we making mistakes, do you think, about how we think about what our children, we might want our children to do?
Well, it's quite interesting because I think a lot of parents who might have creative kids, you know, would be more inclined, would be happier to see them go to become an accountant or go to business school. And I think there are wonderful opportunities in the creative economy. Like, it really has done so well. Like, Ireland Inc. excels in creativity. Like, it's one of our great kind of selling points as a nation. And even the animation sector is, you know, heads and shoulders above most of our European and international counterparts. So I would love to see more kids getting into the creative space. I also think that the animation colleges, you know, they need to train the trainers, because it has moved on so much, like in the last 5 years, like it has moved so much. So I think you need to train the students, but you need to train the trainers as well.
And when it comes to content, we're going to be talking the weekend that's in it about Paddy Whackery and things like that. I know in the animated space, I'm thinking about The Simpsons and the image of Ireland. There were a couple of controversial sort of things there about how they presented Ireland more as an adult cartoon. But if someone came to you and said, we want to make this series and it's going to be all these little Irish leprechauns and it's going to be amazing and they're all going to say Begara,
yeah,
what would you say? Would you say, are you sure you want to do that?
Depends on how much they're paying. No. I don't think that would work internationally, you know. And I think at the heart of what we do is always about engaging kids, you know. So, you know, we do very little work in Ireland or for the Irish audience. You know, the last project we did was Angela's Christmas, actually. Some people might remember that. But I don't think there's much space in the international market for that, the Darby O'Gill.
Have you, at the same time in the creative work that you've done, drawn on your own Irishness?
Oh, I think so, yeah. Yeah, I think we're all very proud to be Irish and producing at the level that we are, where, you know, our studio's a globally recognised brand, and that certainly gives us a lot of satisfaction. But I'm also proud of the animation sector and our, you know, I wouldn't even call them competition, but studios like Jam Media and Cartoon Saloon and Cavalier, like, you know, there's so many great animation studios in Ireland, and, you know, we're all very proud of each other's success. So it's lovely to see it, like a rising tide lifts all boats, and the animation industry here is doing great.
And when you look back on your own career, could you have, at any stage, were you close to doing anything else? Joining the guards or anything else?
Yeah, okay. I came close to joining the guards. Yeah.
Did you? How close?
Very close. But all my family are guards, so guards and prison officers. So I didn't.
What, brothers, sisters?
Yeah, sisters and my father and uncles and cousins, you know. So it's a long line. So
you actually did well to avoid it.
I could be out there doing traffic duty now if I didn't just go down the road of running a Mickey Mouse business.
Well, I think we're all glad that you decided to do what you did. Cathal Gaffney, Managing Director of Brown Bag Films and Chief Operations Officer of Nine Story Media Group. Thank you very much for joining us on the programme.